All right. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. So quick raise of hands, who is here for the data loss prevention session? Cool. Thanks for coming back. Hope you found that session helpful. And now a late session, so thanks for coming back. I know it's been a lot of sessions for all of you today, so appreciate you coming here and learning more about our archiving and compliance story for the next version of Exchange. Quickly, as I mentioned in the other session, we're referring to the new Exchange because the new version of Exchange Online doesn't have a particular version. But I will be referring to the new Exchange as 2013 throughout this session, just for simplicity. But when I refer to 2013, it's referring to both Exchange Server 2013, the new on-premises product that will be released at RTM later this year, as well as the new version of Exchange Online, which doesn't have a version per se, but it is the 2013 wave of that. Quick introduction. My name is Steve Chu. Some of you already know me from the last session in covering DLP. I'm a senior technical product manager for Exchange in Redmond, and my area of expertise is Exchange Online, and thus I have to do a lot with our compliance story, including both DLP as well as our archiving and e-discovery story. So I'm going to spend the next 60 minutes or so trying to convince you guys of all the great investments we have in the next version of Exchange, and hopefully you'll find it interesting. We'll sprinkle a few demos in there as well, so that we'll keep the session engaging. And if you have any questions, any burning questions, feel free to address them within the session. But if it can wait, then I'll definitely have time at the end for questions. And apparently we are giving out another car, which I know you guys probably have seen hundreds of times at this point. And I think we have some t-shirts as well. So I'll make sure to get those out to you, especially for those who are still around at the end. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So how many of you work with Exchange archiving in 2010? Please raise your hand. Okay, so not everyone. Just to give you a little bit of background then, for those of you who are not as familiar with archiving and our compliance story in Exchange, in 2007, we kind of took the first dab at sort of MRM, messaging records management, and sort of being able to apply sort of data lifecycle capabilities within Exchange. And then we took that a big step further in Exchange 2010. We introduced the concept of an in-place archive, where an administrator can provision a secondary mailbox to an end user that really is purposed for cold storage, right? The concept of cold storage. And thus keeping the primary mailbox smaller, the OST smaller, performance better, and also encouraging end users to do away with PSTs, which are very difficult to manage. And if you have a discovery request, you can't find those things because they're all over the place. And really making sure all that data is centrally located, right? So in 2010, we had this concept of archiving. And as a result, also, we took the MRM a step further, allowed retention policies, so the ability to age data out and automatically delete data over time or automatically move data to the archive. And then, of course, we have legal hold, Which allows you to place a mailbox on hold for an indefinite period of time or a rolling legal hold, which means you can actually set a finite period of time to that hold. And then, of course, e-discovery, which is the most important aspect of compliance. If you get a litigation request, you have to present evidence in a case. You need to have e-discovery capabilities. It's that simple. This was great. It's a great first step. A lot of our customers started using archiving in 2010, and we got very, very positive feedback on it. So much so that we wanted to build and continue to progress that in the direction of providing more advanced case management capabilities and really providing an end-to-end compliance story. And that's really where we are now with 2013. So I'll talk a little bit about each of these buckets, which sort of form the big rocks within our compliance story in 2013. Thing to keep in mind, there are two main themes here. One is this concept of in place, and you're going to hear it a lot from me. And the reason you're going to hear it a lot from me, it's really our differentiator. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good archiving compliance vendors out there, third parties, who've been around for a long time, and a lot of our big customers continue to use those products. But one of the advantages we have at Exchange is we own the actual Exchange server. We own the client experience through Outlook and Outlook Web App. And because of that, we can fully integrate the archiving workload and compliance workloads into the product. And that's the advantage we have. So in place just means you keep the data where it belongs, in place. So Exchange data stays in Exchange, SharePoint data stays in SharePoint. And the idea is you can build compliance on top of the data regardless of where it is located. You don't have to move it out of its native store into a third-party store. That's the idea of in place, and you're going to hear that throughout this presentation. The other thing to think about is this concept of federation. Federation meaning being able to run compliance across multiple products. That includes Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. Okay? So this is not just a session on Exchange compliance. This is going to be a session that talks about compliance across the stack and really the value prop of Office 365 and how we're introducing compliance across all of those workloads. Now, with respect to the user admin experience, I talked about this a little bit. This is one of our biggest advantages, is the fact that the admin experience is in the same place as where you would manage any of the other tasks related to an Exchange deployment, whether that be creating mailboxes, managing DLP. And the good thing about it is, for those of you who are familiar, we have introduced role-based access control, RBAC, in 2010, where you can actually delegate roles to specialist users. For example, you can delegate the compliance role to a compliance officer, and that compliance officer will actually get the ability to place mailboxes on hold and to run e-discovery, but just those compliance-related tasks. And those are the only things that would be exposed on their administration dashboard. RBAC is actually back in 2013, as you would expect. And so that means that, you know, it allows you to ensure that only the right folks in your organization have access to these tools that they need to address compliance and to address litigation requests and things of that nature. The user experience also should not be discounted. Keep in mind that most third-party archiving products require a separate UI for the user just because they don't have the tight integration with Outlook and with OWA that we provide. So the value here from Exchange archiving really is, look, you have one administration UI, you have one user UI, and it's consistent across all of the functions, all of the use cases of Exchange. That means you don't have to switch between dashboards, you don't have to authenticate to two different places, you don't have to move data from here to there. As a user, you don't have to worry about going to a separate location to see your offline archive. I mean, all of that, the distinction between the primary and archive for the end user starts to diminish slightly, and that's good. That'll increase their productivity. They no longer have to think about, oh, where is my data and where am I moving it? It's all right there in the same native experience that they're used to. Okay. The next rock there is about immutability, and we get a lot of questions about this, and the way we treat immutability is a little bit different from some of the other archiving products out there. Traditionally, immutability was associated with worm storage, right? Write once, read many. And that's sort of been the standard for a lot of industries. And a lot of industries do require offline storage of archiving data. But we feel that there are a lot of efficiencies to be taken from software-based immutability. And immutability for Exchange is baked into the deepest levels of the Exchange store. So, we say, look, in 2010, when you place a mailbox on legal hold, it is immutable. That data is immutable. And the same applies here as we get into 2013. The one thing to think about immutability is the fact that getting rid of worm storage, for example, cuts down costs, hardware costs. It cuts down a lot of the complexities of, you know, cataloging and indexing. You eventually have to, there has to be a plan for destruction of data once it ages out, and it's a lot harder to do that when you're dealing with hardware and when you're dealing with actual disks. So there's a lot of advantages, obviously, to software-based immutability. And our story around this, of course, in 2010 was legal hold, or litigation hold, which allowed an administrator or a compliance officer, whoever has that role, that RBAC role, to place a mailbox on hold, either indefinitely or over a period of time. Well, we are changing that a little bit in this release. We're actually improving it. We've decided that to have full case management capabilities, you need fine-grained controls on immutability. So now, in Exchange 2013, you'll have the ability to set query-based holds. And remember, this data is in place. So you'll be able to do KQL proximity-based searches, and I'll show you demos of this, so don't worry, we'll walk through this. But you'll be able to do much more granular types of holds and discovery in 2013. In addition to that, we introduced the concept of case in 2013. And that's good, because in 2010, you have a hold on a particular mailbox, and that's it. You're kind of limited to that sort of linear hold or search list. But with the case concept in 2013, we now allow you to run a query-based hold on one particular user for multiple cases, right? So it turns from a two-dimensional linear type of application to one that actually spans multiple dimensions. So it's just a lot more granularity. It's much more fine-grained. And we'll dive into the details of this later on. Data governance, this is basically managing the life cycle of data in response to legal or regulatory or compliance, internal regulatory related requirements. This is really our story, same in 2010, where you have retention and archive policies, right? You have policies, tags that you can apply to either mail items or folders or even conversations, and it will age out those items. It'll automatically delete them after a period of time or automatically move them to the archive after a period of time. We've done some improvements in this area as well to just make that process much more transparent to the user, right? So one of the sets of feedback we got in the last release was sometimes it's not easy for end users to know when their personal applied retention tag gets precedence over the administrator applied global retention tag. And so now we've made it very simple in the UI, and we've taken advantage of a lot of the improvements in the OA UI, for example, to do that as well. And then, of course, e-discovery, right? Compliance is really based on e-discovery, the ability to find data quickly, efficiently, and accurately to be able to provide evidence in a litigation request. And that's something that really improves, especially as we talk about in place and we talk about federation. All of a sudden, you've got a whole world of possibilities in terms of the types of data that you can retrieve in any discovery query. And I'll show you that. So don't worry, we'll dive much deeper into this. So this slide kind of goes into detail. I talked a little bit about the features themselves, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this. But for those of you who are not as familiar with our 2010 archiving and compliance story, this is kind of the model that we use. You've got the idea of preservation, right? You need to preserve content. If you think about the sort of the e-discovery cycle, the first part of that cycle is figuring out, you know, what are the sources that are important, right? What are the mailboxes, sites, whatever they might be, that you will potentially need to retain the data for, right? You need that data to be there. You can't have those end users deleting or editing that data, right? So this is part of the preservation bucket, which is, you know, having an in-place archive, you know, having governance capabilities. That's the retention and archive policies that you can set either as an end user or as an administrator. And then, of course, the hold, right, which is what keeps that data preserved. That's the immutability aspect. Once again, I've talked through some of these features already, so I'm not going to dive into the details here. The second part of this story is search. It's e-discovery, right? And it's not just, you know, top-level search. This is getting down into the nitty-gritty type search, right? Being able to do proximity search, being able to do fuzzy search, being able to do time-based and query-based searches. Being able to apply these to different cases. So I read, I think, somewhere where the average e-discovery case ends up reviewing 100 gigabytes of data, and it ends up costing on average $1 million. And many large organizations end up having to deal with tens and hundreds of these e-discovery cases per year. So you can see that that really adds up, right? And all organizations, large to small, are starting to realize ever since the requirements of e-discovery and compliance sort of came into play about a decade ago with the FRCP ruling. All organizations now realize the importance of having a compliance solution, right? This is not just for the big enterprises. I mean, this is for everyone. And you need a solution that's going to, you know, save you time and save you money. And that's really what we're talking about with archiving in 2013. So the idea here is we designed it to try to save our customers time and money, right? There are still third-party products out there that are really good. And there are some that are going to address very specific verticals that we probably won't address, right? Very specific industry requirements. And we designed our product to kind of be a generalist product, one that can sort of one size fits the most customers. And so certainly there will be partners who provide solutions that will build on top of what we provide or that will complement what we provide for more advanced scenarios. But I think for the majority of customers, this is a really good solution. All right, so let's start with in-place archiving. So I told you a little bit of the history of 2010 and archiving and what we introduced there. The idea really was archiving will allow us to, fulfill the requirements that a lot of administrators told us they needed with large mailboxes and large storage. And it also helps us to eliminate that sort of proliferation of PSTs, right? You guys all know the problem with PSTs. One, PSTs are easily corrupted, so you can lose data. Two, even if PSTs are not corrupted, they're in locations that you cannot control, right? They're outside of your control. And if you have to find data because of e-discovery, you can't find it because those PSTs are not within your control. What we did with archiving was get rid of that PST paradigm and really train end users to think of data being in the server as being just as good an user experience as a PST. And so we designed archiving, the end user experience, to mimic PSTs. And as a result, end users, their productivity does not get sacrificed. In fact, in most cases, it's improved. Right, and I'll show you this in a second. The other thing to think about with archiving is the fact that there is this paradigm of hot storage and cold storage that exists in the industry. Okay? Hot storage is what's in your inbox, what needs to be addressed now, what's recent. Cold storage is, okay, I'm done with that email, I will go store it somewhere, but I still want to access it at some point in the future. And with archiving here, what we're doing, and there's other advantages to that, right? If you move content out of your inbox, you get OST improvements. You're able to use different storage potential mechanisms, right? You can use cheaper storage potentially for the larger mailboxes, the larger archives. Also, it could be if you're in a if you're considering moving to the cloud and you're on premises, right, moving all of your archive data to the cloud first might be one way to do it, right? So there's certainly a lot of benefits to, you know, having this separate archive, which is, as a paradigm, a separate store for data. But what we're doing with Exchange is saying, the traditional paradigm of compliance versus non-compliance mapped directly to primary mailboxes versus archive mailbox, that really doesn't need to exist, especially since we're not talking about hardware storage. We're not talking about Worm. We're not talking about an offline store, right? We're talking about software-based immutability, which means your primary mailbox should be subject to compliance just as much as your archive, right? You shouldn't need to pay for a third-party archive or a separate archive to get compliance. You should get compliance on everything, right? Both the hot data and the cold data. So what you'll see here is a lot of the compliance, right, that we are offering, which includes the MRM, which includes legal hold, which includes e-discovery, all of that applies both to the primary and to the archive data in exchange. Okay, so let's start looking at the product. You can see here that the in-place archive shows up as an extra node on the folder pane of either Outlook or OAuth for the end user. And it looks just like a PST does. The hierarchy is exactly the same. And you can see that the user interface, the user experience is actually the same, right? So this is a huge advantage that we have, because if you have a third-party archiving solution, the UI is going to be a bit stagnated. Right, you'll have a different user experience for the archive versus the primary mailbox. In some cases, you might have stubbing, you might have other forms. Right, third-party archive vendors have been trying to, do their best to integrate the experience into the clients, but they don't have, the direct access to the Outlook engineers that we have. Right, so we've been able to fully integrate this archive experience for end users to make it completely seamless for them. Right, and that's important because that's how they will be more productive. And by the way, whatever actions you can take on the primary mailbox, such as conversations or applying flags or categories or moving to different folders or creating folders or compose and reply, anything you do, you can also do in the archive. Okay. All right. Another big improvement, actually, from 2010 in 2013 is the fact that now we've basically merged the search capability within Outlook and Outlook Web App to include the archive data in the same results as the primary mailbox. So in 2010, if you did a search in your inbox, you would pull up primary mailbox data separately from the archive. Now, in 2013, you'll pull up both. And it's not just one stacked on top of the other, it's merged. So if you open up a conversation, within that conversation, you'll actually get the archive items chronological within that thread. So it's a fully integrated experience. And once again, this is an advantage that we have, being that we are Exchange and we work closely with Outlook and Outlook Web App, that other third-party archiving products are not able to provide. CC search everywhere at once, integrated search. Okay, now let's talk about data governance. So I mentioned earlier that with retention and archive policies, this is now transparent to the user. Okay, so you can see here on the email in the back, right under the to line, you can see retention policy delete after 10 years and expire. It even gives you an expiry date. And then if you see the properties, you can see exactly what retention policies or archive policies are available to you as an end user. So now there's less confusion from the end user perspective on whether or not my personally applied retention or archive tags will take precedence or not over the organizational applied ones that the admin enforces. There's just a lot of transparency here. And that's important because, once again, a lot of competing archiving products, they just don't have this integration with the client. So as a result, sometimes they'll deprecate emails randomly and the end user has no way of knowing when it'll happen, right? And that's not a good user experience. So once again, we're taking advantage of our integration with the client here to provide information to the end user, make them more productive, make them more compliant with these policies. Okay, see, there's the retention policy expiry details, and then of course you can assign them as well. And so how this works is, as an administrator, you can apply a retention or archive policy globally across your entire organization, or you can create a series of policies that you can allow end users to choose themselves. Okay? And so there's a lot of flexibility in terms of how this governance is actually managed. And the other thing about data governance that we should talk about is the fact that all of this is managed in one place, right? In the same place that you would manage everything else, right? I talked about the fact that we have one administration experience, and that should not be discounted, right? The fact that you manage your e-discovery, your legal hold, your retention, your DLP, your mailbox provisioning, all of this happens from the same place. So it just saves you a lot of time, saves you a lot of the inefficiency of having to learn another system, another interface, and it just makes makes your job easier. Okay, so you've got, remember, delete policies and archive policies. When you can also set both, keep in mind, right? It doesn't have to be one or the other. If you set an archive policy on an item and a delete policy on the item, the logic here is the archive policy comes first and then the delete policy, right? So the delete policy actually follows that item to the archive or to wherever you move it. Okay, so the system is smart enough to know that. Okay, so I kind of use that segment on the administration as a nice segue into this section of the presentation. Remember, the archive can take, or deploying an archive can take many different shapes. You could have, you know, all of your primary and archives on premises. You can have all of your primary mailboxes and archives in the cloud. You can have, you know, some primary mailboxes and archives on-prem and some in the cloud. But of course, the archives will probably be co-located with the primary. Or you can have all of your primary on-premises, and you can have Exchange Online Archiving, which is our cloud service, to have all of your archiving items in the cloud, right? And a lot of our on-premises customers use that as sort of a path or a test, a litmus test to get to the cloud. Let's move all of our archive data into the cloud. All of our cold storage, let's move that to the cloud. Let's try out Exchange Online Archiving, see how the service works, get that to the cloud, and then we'll think about whether we want to move the rest of our mailboxes. So whatever shape or form the deployment takes, the experience is the same, okay? You can deploy from the Exchange Administration Center, which is the one web-based console in 2013 that allows you to manage everything, right? Because in 2010, we had the ECP, the EMC, the FOPI admin console. So we had multiple interfaces, and in 2013, it all gets consolidated into the EAC, and so you can manage all of the deployment of the archive within the Exchange Administration Center. And the end user experience does not change whether you have a hybrid configuration or not. Okay, so once again, keeping the experience seamless, keeping it consistent, will be good for productivity and good for sort of the efficiency of managing your own time. So you can see, it's as simple as clicking an enable or disable, right? It's very simple. The objective here is to make provisioning an archive mailbox as simple and as consistent with provisioning a regular mailbox, right? It essentially is the same as a primary mailbox. It's just a secondary storage. And if you think of Exchange Online, you know, we market that you get unlimited storage for the Exchange Online Plan 2. Unlimited storage, right? In the enterprise space, that's sort of been unheard of for a while. So, you know, with our large mailboxes, with our investments there, and then with our investments in archiving to make sure the experience is seamless across the stack, you're getting potentially large storage capabilities as a result. All right, and then auditing, very important, right? And the auditing doesn't change much. I mean, in 2013, you're going to get all the reports you'd expect, any configuration changes, If you know, you get an audit trail for any time mailboxes or queries or mailboxes or sites were placed on hold, when anyone's running an e-discovery request, whenever anyone's giving permissions out to the compliance role for RBAC. So all those things are tracked, and you can export these reports in a lot of different formats as well. There's a lot of flexibility there. Some other reports, there's like a non-owner mailbox access report. So if you have delegates accessing mailboxes, you can track which which mailboxes have had non-owners actually logging in, things like that. So there's a lot of reports. Certainly, any of you who are more interested in that, feel free to come by and talk to me afterwards. Okay, here's one that I think will get your attention. I talked about federation. So I talked about being able to place hold and e-discovery on Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. Okay. Now, Exchange data stays in Exchange, and SharePoint data stays in SharePoint. That's the concept of in-place. Now, Link data, on the other hand, Link actually gets archived to Exchange in 2013. Okay. So you're still going to get hold and e-discovery on Link data, but you're going to get that Link data in the Exchange store. Okay. And this happens at the server. So just to give you an example here, let's assume that we've got Exchange Online and Link Online, and we've got a user A, who's been placed on in-place hold for Exchange. And then that user goes and joins a Link meeting. So what happens is Exchange Online and Link Online are sharing the AD attributes for that user. So Link Online knows that that user has been placed on hold by Exchange. So any interactions that user has in that Link meeting, Link is actually going to record it at the server level. And once it's done that, it's going to create a transcript and send it to Exchange. And that transcript will be held in Exchange under Exchange's in-place hold. Okay. So and this is immutable data, right, because it's done on the server. And you can hold just about anything in Link, right? You can hold conversation transcripts. You can hold the whiteboard, any attachments, whatever it might be, right? All of that stuff. And no matter what the modality either, whether it's PC, mobile, web, OWA, all of that gets saved. Okay, that's assuming the user's on hold, right? So once the user's on hold, then Link will automatically preserve that data, and it'll then be stored in Exchange. And then when you do the hold and the discovery for Exchange, the Link data shows up with Exchange. This works for that matrix you see there. It doesn't work for Link Online and Exchange on-prem. Okay, but otherwise, you can configure it. Pretty straightforward. It's an OAuth. You establish OAuth, and then it's a Boolean check to make sure that Link and Exchange are integrated, and then you're pretty much done. So it's pretty straightforward. So this is great. All right. Now, in-place hold. This is probably the topic that a lot of you are interested in. We get the most inquiries about hold and e-discovery, as you'd imagine. These are really, this is where the bulk of the compliance requirements and scenarios exist. And just to show you again the journey that we've taken, right? We've got Exchange 2010. We had litigation hold, renamed legal hold. Preserve all content, preserve it indefinitely. And then in Office 365, we introduced time-based in-place hold, also known as rolling legal hold. So it allowed our customers to set a finite period of time for that data to be held. And once again, what does hold mean? Hold means that, for those of you who aren't familiar, hold means when you place a mailbox on hold, for example, the user can continue to edit and delete those items in the mailbox. But whatever they do, an original version of those emails are stored in a recoverable items folder that is not accessible or viewable by the end user. So that's what hold means. Hold means that you have an immutable version of that data in a store that can be used for e-discovery, can be used for litigation requests, but that's not tamperable and not viewable by that end user, right? So that's what we're talking about with hold. And in-place hold simply means that that data, that recoverable items folder, exists in Exchange. And thus, all of the indexing that happens in Exchange. And time-based hold means you don't have to save that data forever. You can set a finite period of time for it. Now, with the new exchange, with Exchange 2013, we are offering fine-grained, granular capabilities for Holden Discovery. So that means that now, instead of just placing an entire mailbox on hold, or placing an entire mailbox on hold for a certain period of time, you can place a subset of that mailbox on hold for a certain period of time. And that subset is determined by a query. So it could be a keyword. It could be a proximity search. So any keyword that's within 30 characters of this keyword, right, hold it. So the actual capabilities, the granularity is improving a lot in this next version of Exchange. Okay. So there's a concept here. There's three concepts here in hold, in place hold. The first concept is, what are the sources? Okay. Who are the users? What are the mailboxes and the sites that you need to make sure nothing gets deleted from? Right? If you have a litigation case and they've identified three individuals in your organization who are under investigation, you're going to put the three mailboxes and sites related to those three individuals on hold. Okay? All of it, right? Potentially on hold. But then you have the second and third parts of this paradigm, of this model. And the second is how long, right? Because you don't want to put all this data on hold forever. That increases your risk, right? The more data you have sitting there forever means that you're more vulnerable to other litigation requests, right? If the regulation is telling you that you can actually delete data after a certain period of time, you should delete it, right? Instead of exposing yourself to more potential risk with that data that doesn't have to be there in the first place, right? So, how long should this data be held? And then, of course, once you've held that data, what subset of data within that sort of corpus of data do you need to present to opposing counsel? You don't want to present everything. That's expensive, because then they have to go through more stuff. And it probably doesn't help your case by providing more data, more information than you need to, right? So you really should only be providing the bare minimum of data. And as a result, the search queries that you need to be able to run on this corpus of data needs to be precise, right? And if it's precise, it will save you money and it'll save you time. Now, in terms of how you manage in place hold, with Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, you do that through the eDiscovery Center. And the demo today is going to focus entirely on the eDiscovery Center. So I'm going to show you how it works across the stack. But if you don't have SharePoint and you only want to run eDiscovery across Exchange and Link data, that's fine. You can do that through the Exchange Administration Center, which I mentioned earlier is the sort of one-stop shop, the web console that manages all things Exchange, and you'll be able to do that from there. Okay, and you'll get all of the same case management and sort of KQL-type search capabilities with that. Okay, so I'm not going to talk too much about this, but once again, the immutability idea, right? Software immutability actually works. And, if you use Worm storage, there are a lot of drawbacks to that. Hardware considerations, how do you destroy that data eventually? What's the processes for doing that? So there's certainly a lot of advantages to using Exchange for immutability for in-place hold. Okay, so let's jump into a demo now. I know you guys, I've been talking a lot, and my mouth is getting dry, so I figure you guys probably are itching to see some product. So let's go ahead and get this demo started. So I'm going to start off by showing you the case management capabilities in the eDiscovery Center. Now remember, the eDiscovery Center is in SharePoint, okay? If you don't need SharePoint data, you can do a lot of this in the Exchange Administration Center, which only applies to Exchange and Link data. I'm going to sit down, so you might just see the top of my head, because it's just easier for me to maneuver the mouse when I'm sitting. But I will try to get up and speak as I go. So here you see the eDiscovery Center, and you see here the option to create a new case. So if I click on that, I get this site, right? which allows me to add a title. So let's say, actually, let's call this North Wind 2. Okay? And we'll do this as well. Okay, and you can see here, you've got the options to use it, the same permissions as the parent site. So this is a case within a site, for those of you who are familiar with SharePoint. And then you've got some navigation options. I'm just going to keep the defaults here and just click Create. And once I do that, it should create a case on the on this particular SharePoint site. And the reason this is significant is now you can apply a hold on a mailbox or a site for multiple cases, right? I mentioned earlier, it's no longer just sort of a two-dimensional list, right? You actually can run as many queries as you want for multiple cases. You can run a query for the same person across 5 cases if that person is being investigated in 5 different cases. So it just provides a lot more flexibility in terms of how you can manage the e-discovery process for all the different litigation requests that might come up. All right. So now we've got discovery sets and we've got queries. And I'm going to start off by talking about discovery sets. So if I click a new item here, it's asking me to create a discovery set. Now, the discovery set is simply an instance of sources and filters that yields a certain set of results. And that set of results, you basically want to place on hold. So think about it. You can place an entire mailbox on hold, and that's fine. You've got the entire mailbox on hold. It might not be the most efficient way to use storage, and you might have a harder time finding the exact thing you want because there's so much more data when you save an entire mailbox or when you hold an entire mailbox. But you can place an entire mailbox on hold. What we're doing here with the discovery set is now allowing you to place a subset of that mailbox on hold. And that subset can be determined by sources, by queries, and by a period of time. Okay? So what we're doing here is we're going to place a subset of the sources that we're going to input in here on hold. And that will be our discovery set, what we're calling a discovery set. So I'm going to call this Northwind 2, which is the same name as the case. And here I'm going to have the opportunity to now add sources. Okay? So I'm going to add a few mailboxes here. Let's add KDJ. Let's add Sarah D. And let's add Alex D. Okay. All right. And I'm going to also, let's see, I'm going to click on this Northwind Traders site, and I want to also add this as a source, right? Because a lot of my organization's employees have stuff on this site. So I click it here. Let's get this down to the root URL. And that should work. Okay, there you go. So now I've got 3 mailboxes and a SharePoint site as my sources for this discovery set. Click OK. And what it's going to do now, it's going to add those sources to this discovery set. Now, the cool thing about this is that it provides you statistics, right? It provides you statistics of how many items are in that source and what's the total size, okay? So you can see here, none of these things are on hold yet because I haven't actually placed them on hold. But you've got the items and you've got the size here, okay? Now, I can go ahead, you can see here that I can click enable in place hold here and then just click save and it'll be placed on hold. And that's the level of hold for at least those mailboxes. That's the level of hold I would have gotten in 2010. But now with 2013, I can go ahead and click run a query. So I'm running a query now for the keyword Northwind. And I can put a start date and an end date if I want to, but I'm going to go ahead and keep it indefinite. And then I apply the filter, and you can see that these statistics have changed, right? Now, what I'll go ahead and do is I'll enable in place hold on this. and I'll go ahead and preview results. So if I preview results now, I can actually see sort of snippets of the items that I'm now considering placing on hold. There's an Exchange tab here, there's a SharePoint tab here. And if I click on these, it should actually pull up a live version of that email or that document right here from the eDiscovery Center. Now, keep in mind, those are actually live emails and documents, right? That's the advantage of in-place. With third-party archiving solutions, you have to move that data to a third-party store. With in-place, that data stays in Exchange and SharePoint. So when you click on the preview, you're actually getting a preview of that data within Exchange and SharePoint. Okay, so we'll close this. We'll go ahead and enable in-place hold. And there you go. You now have a discovery set called Northwind 2. Okay, and then once again, if I click on it, it'll pull up the statistics, and there's a hold here. In case some of you are looking at the numbers, they might be a little bit off. We're still in preview, the preview environment, so there's it's not completely accurate at the moment. But you know, once we get to RTM and GA, obviously the statistics will be spot on, right? And you'll be able to rely on it for a lot of the workflows that you'll eventually need to run that are sort of downstream from placing these items on hold. Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and go back to the deck. Okay. All right. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about in-place eDiscovery, and then we'll do another demo, and then I'll open up for questions. And I think we're pretty good on time. I have about a little over 10 minutes, so should be able to do this. Now, I talked about sort of the eDiscovery, the process, and just to recap it, you've got a life cycle here of eDiscovery, right? You've got to manage your sources, and that's part of this identify and preserve bucket, right? And you saw that with what we did with the discovery set. You identify the mailboxes and the sites, and you can identify file shares as well. So you can actually input file shares into that managed sources box. But you identify and preserve. You start off with all of the mailboxes and sites that you want to preserve, that you cannot afford to have the data in any of those mailboxes or sites changed in any way, right? Then you search and process. So you've got a large volume of data, and now you do the search. Right? Whether it was a keyword search or whether it's something more advanced than that, you distill that sort of corpus of data down to what you really need. Okay? Then from there, you submit for review. Right? You might have your lawyers, your in-house lawyers, figuring out from that set of data what will actually be presented to opposing counsel. Okay? And then you produce it. And so you can see that the volume of data starts to shrink and the relevance of data needs to increase. And what we're offering in Exchange 2013 is really to expedite this process for you and make it cheaper. Because the more data you submit to the lawyers, the more money you're going to be spending on lawyers, right? So you want to only provide the data that's necessary at any time. And of course, if you provide too much data, that's not good for the case anyways, right? So really, you're looking to preserve the large set of data that you need to ensure that you have everything you want for this case, but you need to get that information to a presentable amount, to a presentable format for opposing counsel. And so with eDiscovery, we basically offer you those capabilities. And I'm going to show you a demo of this so that you can actually see it. You can get the context around why we do this. There's three benefits to this, to what we offer as eDiscovery. Because certainly there's a lot of eDiscovery products out there. And some have been around for a long time and are very good. But the advantages that we provide, one is all the eDiscovery can be done in one place. Right? This goes back to our in-place concept here. Exchange, Link, SharePoint data can all be managed from one place. You can run a query-based search, right? So you can distill that data down to a fine-grained amount of data that will make your lives easier and will make your fees with legal counsel and things like that decrease, Okay? And third, you're going to ensure that this data is only around for the period of time that you want. Okay? And that's important. A lot of customers actually say, we keep a lot of data. We retain a lot of data. And no, you really should only be keeping data that you need to keep and really deleting any data, disposing any data that you don't need, right? And so what we're doing here is we're providing all of these capabilities in place and across the workloads or in the Office 365 stack. All right, so deep analytics, and I'm going to do a demo, so I don't want to talk too much about this, but a couple things to think about. We've got the statistics, you saw that, right? And we can actually do KQL proximity search, which is something we could not do in 2010. And for those who don't know what KQL is, it means that you can do keywords in proximity to other keywords, right? Within 30 characters or within 30 words, things like that. So that's great, right? Once again, you're refining that search down. We provide an in-place preview, which you saw a little preview of that in the last demo, right? If you click on any of the preview items, it actually shows a live copy of that item in Exchange or SharePoint. We offer refiners, so when you actually have that preview list, we'll allow you to refine down to certain extension types, and I'll show you how that looks. And when you export the data out, we offer a lot of capabilities, including deduplication. Right, so one of the challenges with Exchange in the past was you get a lot of duplicates, right, from reply all and things like that. You have a lot of instances of a certain message, and you can actually run that deduplication when you export the data out. Okay, so instead of me telling you this, why don't I show you? Okay. So let's go back to our demo. Okay, and you see we're back at the case page here, Northwind 2, and I'm going to go click back, and I've got now search and export. This is where my query queries get stored. So I click new item. Okay, now what it's doing, it noticed that I already inputted a set of sources into my discovery set. So I've got, you know, Katie Jordan, Sarah Davis, Alex Darrow, Northwind, et cetera. So I'm going to go ahead and click or give it a name. And this time, let's go ahead and put in a KQL query. We'll leave the start date, end date as open. But here you can see that this is no longer just filtering based on a particular keyword. Now we're filtering based on a proximity search, okay? And when I run that search, you can see that it filtered the items down to the ones that actually match that proximity search criteria. And it provides sort of all of the query statistics related to all the data that came across from that proximity search. And it pulls up the results, right? So you've got Exchange tab here, which pulls up these results. And notice when I hover over each of these, it gives me an actual preview of what that item is. You can see that if I hover, you get the from, the to, a preview of the message, and the header. And you've got refiners here, what we're calling refiners, where you can actually specify specific message types and refine it. And keep in mind, when you click on each of these links, it'll actually take you to an OWA, a live OWA page with that email in it. Okay. If you look at the SharePoint tab, once again, you've got preview, in-place preview. You've got the document type, last modified. And of course, you know, when you click on it, it will open in the rich client or in the web app, depending on what you have on your native device. And you've got, once again, refiners here. So if you want only PowerPoints, you know, it'll filter that down to just the PowerPoints. Okay, I'm going to go and clear that. And now, when I go ahead and export this, I've got a few options. You can remove duplicate Exchange content. You can remove RMS protection, right, so that you can actually read the contents once you open them. You can include SharePoint versions, and you can include items that are encrypted. So I'm going to click OK. And keep in mind now, what we're doing here is we're actually placing a hold and running discovery against Exchange data, also SharePoint data, not just documents, but you get websites, blogs, wikis, you know, social media content, OneNotes, you know, whatever you can think of that's a file type that you'd expect from Exchange or SharePoint, you're able to run the discovery against it. And now you have an option. You can download a report or you can download results. I'm going to go ahead and download results. And what it's going to do is download the results to my local desktop. And so I'm going to go ahead and let it do that. And it's going to go ahead and now start downloading. And all those items you saw a preview of, those things are going to end up on the desktop. Now, what you're going to get on the desktop, I'll show you once it's done downloading. But what you're going to get are the actual items themselves. You're going to get Exchange data in a PST. You're going to get the SharePoint data as it appears in the shared site. And then you're also going to get a report for auditing purposes. And you're also going to get an MHT file, which will include all the sites and things like that. And then things like social media content or other content will come in a CSV file format, right? But the other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of what you get here is you get an extensibility story, okay? And I'll show you in a second. So I'll go ahead and close this and look on my desktop. And here's the export folder. And if I open it, you've got, here's the Exchange data in a PST. You've got all the documents, right? There they are. You've got MHT files for the website. You've got all the reports, the errors, things like that, indexing errors. The export summary for auditing. And then here's the manifest that I wanted to talk about. So I'm not going to open it because it's an XML file. But basically, this manifest includes all the information about, you know, the processes that were used for running this eDiscovery query and all the results. And the extensibility story really is a partner who can take this information and then use it, right? So you can actually kick off new workflow from the export process from the eDiscovery Center. So that's great, right? That'll really open up a lot of possibilities in terms of what you want to do with this content once you've actually filtered it and distilled it down to what you're looking for. All right. So that is that, and I think I'm right on time. And so we'll go ahead and finish this off real quickly. And then, you know, I'll be around after for questions if we don't have enough time. But let's go ahead and switch this back. All right, so just to summarize, for in-place eDiscovery, you've got a unified experience for holding eDiscovery across all the three workloads from one interface. You've got case management capabilities now, so you can go ahead and run queries and eDiscovery queries across the same set of data for multiple cases. You've got in-place hold and in-place search previews, so the search preview is actually of data that's live, that's in place, it's not moved over to a third-party storage, journaled somewhere that you have to go to a separate interface to access. And of course, you have export, and you've got some great workflow scenarios that you can create from that export process. And of course, deduplication, refiners, and KQL. KQL is important because, once again, you only want to present data that you absolutely need to. You don't want to present more than that. And the KQL will allow you to get really granular in terms of the results. All right, so resources, please fill out an evaluation. It really helps me and helps TechEd to continue to improve and continue to make sure that the information we provide you is what you're looking for. And that's it. So I think time's run out, so I don't know if we have to stop, but I will hang out for a while for those who have questions.